Tell me your name and where you live now.
My name is Viola Grothy, and I live in Elk Point, South Dakota at the present time.
And where did you live during World War II?
Part of the time I lived in Denver, Colorado, and the other time I lived in Washington, D.C.
Before we started the interview, you were telling me about what you were doing the day Pearl Harbor was attacked. Can you tell me that story again?
The day Pearl Harbor was attacked, a friend and I took a bunch of the boys that were stationed, had been drafted, and were stationed at Buckley Field. We took them up in the mountains on a trip, and that's when we heard that Pearl Harbor was attacked. And we had all these servicemen, and it kind of hurt them pretty bad. Well, it did all of us as far as that's concerned. The servicemen that had been drafted, they figured that they would be going pretty quick.
How old were you?
When Pearl Harbor was attacked, I was 15 or 16. So I was still in high school. This friend knew some of the boys from Buckley Field because she was from Elk Point here. And some of the boys were from Elk Point, but she attended our church, and that's how come I got connected with them and went with the lady up there.
So you were a high school student at the time the war started. You were telling me how your mother worked at Buckley Field. Was your mother working at Buckley Field at this time?
No, my mother started working at Buckley Field after the war started. Prior to that, she was the first woman driver in Buckley Field, a civilian woman driver. Before that, the servicemen always did it, before the war started, like sergeants or corporals or something. But then they had to start hiring outsiders, and my mother was the first woman driver hired.
Okay, so you were 15 or 16 years old. You just happened to know this young woman from Elk Point, South Dakota, who was out there in Colorado.
She was working out there and came to this church where I was. That's how come I
Okay.
got acquainted.
So you were in the mountains with a woman and some young men from Elk Point, South Dakota, when you found out Pearl Harbor had been attacked.
Not all the boys were from Elk Point, just the
Oh,
lady.
sure.
Yeah.
Oh, just the lady.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm sorry, I
Well, I guess
misunderstood.
one
So
of
the
the other, I guess there was at least one or two others from Elk Point here too that were with us, but there was, oh, seven or eight of them that we took.
Do you remember how you felt when you heard the news? Did you have any inkling or somehow know that life was going to change as soon as you heard the news?
I didn't, especially at the moment, but all the servicemen that were in the car with us did. They said right away, "Oh boy, here we go." They knew right away what was coming, and but we did spend a little time up there, but then they had to get back to the base before too long, so.
So, can you tell me what was the first thing that changed for you in your everyday life when the war started?
Well, I guess I joined the group that had dances and things like that for the servicemen. I can't think of the name of it now. I did that for a long time, and that was one of the first things that I changed. We had a lot of the servicemen come to our church, and we got acquainted with a lot of them, and then they had to go away, and that hurt like everything when you lost all your friends and things.
You were telling me earlier about your mother being the first woman driver at Buckley Airfield. I have a couple questions about that. First of all, was Buckley Airfield a big airfield?
Well, it was pretty large at the time, yes, but after the war it was closed up right away. It didn't last too long, but it was quite a big airfield, yes.
When did your mom become a driver? Because she hadn't worked up
No.
to that point, I would think that would have been a change. So, how long was it before she took this job at the airfield?
Well, I'm not positive, but I would guess early in 1942, and she stayed there until after the field closed, so she was there for a good 4 or 5 years, so that's the only job she ever had.
You were also telling me earlier that you too worked at the airfield then. Tell me just a little bit about that.
Well, I worked at the PX, at the soda fountain sometimes, and in parts of the PX too. And I worked there until I left for Washington, D.C. in 1944.
What kind of work was involved in what you did at the airfield at the soda fountain, the store?
Well, I would wait on the customers and take their money and visit with the boys. A lot of them came in just to visit because they were all lonesome, and we spent a lot of time just visiting, although we did work too.
What's the one thing that sticks in your mind about the time that you spent working at the airfield?
Just getting to know the boys and finding out where they were from and being friends with them. After the war, I kept in touch with some of them, not too many years, but I had one very dear friend that was in the B-17 over there, and he was a prisoner of war. And I went to visit his folks after I moved to Washington, D.C., because they lived in New York City. But I never did hear from him after the war. I don't know what happened.
Where were some of these boys from?
Oh, they were from all over. This particular boy I was telling you about, he was from New York City. A lot of them were from the East Coast and all over the United States, California.
How many years did you work in the airfield, two or three?
I suppose I worked there probably 2 years.
So from approximately 15 or 16 till about 18?
Yeah, because I was 18 when I went to Washington, D.C.
Tell me about moving to Washington, D.C., why you moved there and what you did.
I decided I should do something with my life. I graduated from high school. So I went to airline school to learn to be a radio operator, which at that time, we kept more in contact with the airplanes from the time they left the airport until they landed at the next airport. They would report to us on the radio. And in case of an emergency or something like that, that's what I did. Until after the war, probably 6 months after the war, when the boys started coming back that had the job before, then I transferred into a teletype operator. I still work for the airline, but in a different position.
So the work for the airline, this was civilian work. You weren't working for the armed services. You weren't radio operation for the military.
No, it was strictly for the airline.
And it was American Airlines?
American Airlines, yes.
How long did you have to train, and what was the training like?
Well, I trained in Kansas City for about 6 weeks is all. It was a lot of fun. I learned how to do it. I was supposed to learn the Morse code, too, but I never did learn that because they did a lot of that on the Morse code, sending messages and things like that. But I never did learn the Morse code. So.
Okay, so you are 18 years old. You've just arrived in Washington, D.C., and you've got this job being a radio operator for American Airlines. Tell me what life was like for that time.
Well, life was very exciting. It was a big change for a little country, a little gal from Denver, which was a small town in those days, to move to Washington, D.C. And I worked at the airport, and so it was traveling back and forth. When I first got there, I was all by myself, didn't know a soul, but they got me an apartment, and there I made other friends. And so it was a very exciting time. We had to work different shifts, day shifts, afternoon shifts, and night shifts. In those days, we weren't afraid to be out on the streets after dark. We'd take the bus from the airport into Washington, D.C., because the airport is in Virginia. And 9 times out of 10, we'd walk home, maybe a mile and a half, 2 miles. But we weren't afraid. You know, I wouldn't do it today. I wouldn't let my daughter or granddaughters do it today either. But in those days, it was very exciting. We were very happy, contented, you know, as I say, we weren't afraid at all. It was very exciting to work for the airlines. One time I was sitting looking out the window and I saw a B-25 taking off. And I said, that is not going to make it. And it didn't. It got about 10 feet off the ground and plop. I don't know what happened. The boy, whoever was driving, they all walked out of it safe and sound. Nobody got hurt. But it was a funny thing that happened. I could just see it. And I said, that plane is not going to make it. And things like that. And I don't know whether anybody remembers when a B-25 flew into the Empire State Building in those days, but I was working that day too and heard that. It was very exciting.
In what other ways was it exciting? You say what an exciting time this was, and I can imagine to an 18-year-old girl in Washington, D.C. during the time of the war, it would be exciting in different ways, but it might also be scary because you were on the East Coast. So can you tell me a little bit more about what was exciting about the time and what was scary? And maybe how those, maybe they overlapped at times.
Well, as I say, I was never afraid, scared. As I say, I was got homesick, of course, you know, being there the first time away from home. But being afraid, no, I was never afraid. Maybe it was just me, I don't know. When I had time off, I went to New York City and up to Hartford, Connecticut, and to see one of the boys that I knew from Buckley Field and just things like that, you know.
I'm curious how the war affected that work in so far as, were there any particular situations that you were trained to be on the lookout for or anything that you were supposed to be alerted to, or did you ever go through any air raid drill or anything like that? I'm just curious if there were certain situations that they tried to prepare you for that they were afraid might happen.
No, because we didn't have the problems that we got today. We had black curtains and things so that we had blackouts. You couldn't have lights and things like that on. But there was no air raids, or we never had any security or anything. There was nothing like that like goes on today. It's very different in those days.
I've heard about the rations and things. Can you tell me what daily life was like in terms of what you had and didn't have, and just the different things that were going on in daily life as part of the war effort that you saw or experienced while you were in D.C.?
Well, the main thing, we had gasoline ration, but then I didn't have a car, so that didn't bother me. But we had food rations. We could only have meat once in a great while. When we'd go to a restaurant, it was the same thing. You had a lot of fish because they couldn't get red meat. So we had a lot of fish in those days because of the red meat, you couldn't get it. And we had gasoline rationing, and you couldn't buy sugar, very little sugar. So when you wanted to make some cookies or something, you had to improvise.
How did you improvise? What did you use instead then?
Well, that's a good question. I really don't remember. After all, that's been a long time ago. But I do remember my girlfriend and I, one day, we had enough rations to get a couple pork chops. So we had pork chops, and then we bought a bottle of wine to go with.
That must have been quite a night, quite a dinner.
It was. We never went anywhere, just in our own apartment. We still talk about that when we correspond, the pork chops and wine we had.
So how long were you in Washington, D.C. doing this work for the airline?
I was there from 1944 until 1948 when I left.
Can you tell me then how you met your husband? Was he in the war?
He was in the war, but he was never sent overseas. He was one of the major mechanics on B-25s in North Carolina. However, I met my husband because one of the boys that came to Buckley Field from Elk Point here, he and I got to be very good friends, when just friends, you know, no boyfriend, girlfriend or thing. In fact, he saw his girlfriend one day, and he came to me and he says, I seen the girl I'm going to marry. And he did. He hadn't met her yet, but he saw her. But anyway, he was from Elk Point, and he came to our church. He was one of the boys that was with our church group. So he kept telling me, he said, I know just the guy for you, you know. But we never met until 1949. We met in March, and we were married in September, even though we lived 600, 700 miles apart. And I've been living here in Elk Point ever since.
So he was in the service, but he was never sent overseas. You said he was a mechanic. Did you guys talk about the war years and your experiences?
A little, but not too much. He always said that he wanted to go overseas, and he was always ready to go. And one time he was ready to go, but then his commanding officer said, no, you're not going. I need you here. So, but he did a lot of flying. He was not a flyer, I mean a pilot, but he would take the plane up and check it out. So he did that, and he went a lot of times with some of the other men when they went around to different places. As I say, he was never in the service himself. My brother was over in Germany, but he doesn't talk too much about it. He was in the Signal Corps, and they went ahead of the fighting forces to set up communications and stuff. But he doesn't talk too much about it, so I really don't know too much about his war years.
Has he shared any of that experience with you at all? Any stories at all?
No, not really that I remember.
Was he an older or younger brother? And when did he go into service?
He was an older brother. He was 2 years older than I was. And I think he went in 43. I'm not positive. And he was in basic, and then he was sent overseas right from basic. As I say, he was in the Signal Corps, so he went ahead of the fighting forces to set up communications and things.
Was he the only member of your family that was serving overseas?
In that war, yes. My dad was in World War I, but I have an older older than that, but he was a 4F, had osteomyelitis, so they couldn't take him.
I'm trying to imagine how it must have felt 15 or 16 until you were in your early 20s during the war and just after. You were in Denver, and I'm thinking how life might have changed for you. All of a sudden, your mom had a job. All of a sudden, you were working at this airfield. Your brother was sent overseas. Can you give me some idea of what all of that felt like, especially as a teenager?
Well, it was very disturbing, wondering what was going to happen and how long this was going to keep on. It was very disturbing. My brother was going to be sent out of Denver there, and he was supposed to be come in at 9 o'clock in the morning. So I went down to the railroad station and waited, but they didn't come in till 7 o'clock that night. And I didn't get to see him because they had to leave right away, but they were supposed to have been able to spend the day there, but they didn't get in until they had to leave. So many of the young people that I grew up with had gone. A lot of them didn't come back, just like all the wars today. It's a very disturbing thing. But I was young enough, you know, that it didn't probably affect me as much as if I'd have been, say, 5, 6 years older. I was still young enough that everything's going to be just fine, you know. But it was very disturbing time. There's no getting around that. Time I would not want to repeat, which we do every day now. There's so many wars since then. Terrible.
What would you say was the scariest or worst part about those years?
Personally, you know, as a young girl, was the rationing. We couldn't do what we wanted to do. It was the USO that I was talking about, going to the parties, the USO. But we did a lot of that, which was a lot of fun. But it was a very disturbing time. So many of the boys didn't come home, lost track of a lot of friends. Maybe some of them came back and went somewhere else, and you just lost track of them. So it's not a fun time. I had some good times, but I had some bad times too.
I imagine you worried about your brother.
Oh, yes, I worried about my brother. And as I say, this one friend that I had, was a very close friend, he was a gunner on a B-17, and he ended up captured, but I never heard from him. I don't know whatever happened to him, whether he ever come back from that or not. And that was right after, that was fairly early in the war that he was downed, and things like that. And then there was several of them like that that I just wondered what happened to them and where they are today. And as I say, this a lot of the boys that I met from here got home okay, and some didn't, you know. And same thing out home in Colorado, and even in Washington, D.C., the boys that whose job I took because they had to go to service didn't come back. So
Did your brother write? Did you get letters from your brother, or did your mom? Was he able to communicate with the family?
oh yeah, my mom especially got letters, and I did occasionally too, but he was pretty busy. So but my mom heard from him. He and my mom, well, I suppose 15, 16 years ago now, went over there, so she saw where he was stationed and things. He took her over there. So that was interesting for my mom. Well, it had to be longer ago than that because my mom's been gone that long. Must have been about 40 years ago. And my mom really enjoyed that. And he enjoyed it too, going back to see how things had changed since he was there.
And this was in Germany?
Yeah, that was in Germany. He took her to Germany for the to show her around.
Now, you were saying that you had some, there were some bad times, but good times too during those years. And I'm wondering the flip side of what was the scariest or worst part of those years, what was the best part?
Well, the best part was just seeing part of the world that I hadn't seen before, the East Coast. As I say, I went down to Williamsburg, Virginia, and up to Hartford, Connecticut, and New York City. That was the good part, you know. It was wonderful going to, and the people I had met while I was working there meant a lot to me, an awful lot. So that was the good part. Got to see some of the country that I'd never seen before, and I probably never see it again.
I'm wondering if you would have had that opportunity had the war not happened, in terms of had the opportunity to get the job in Washington, D.C., and be the radio operator and do the things that you did. Do you think that opportunity would have come about had it not been for the war?
I rather doubt it, because I probably wouldn't have gone to do that, because they had plenty of men to do those jobs, and so therefore I wouldn't have gone into that, because I had a job too there working at a store as a bookkeeper and stuff, and I'd probably ended up just doing that the rest of my life. So probably not. It was the war that caused that.
And you wouldn't have met your husband either had it not been for the war.
No, that's true. I wouldn't have met him if it hadn't have been for the war with me. So that was one good thing that came out of it, because we had 55 good years together. So
If there was one thing about World War II and how it was on the home front that you would like people to know, what would that be?
well, for one thing, everybody was concerned about the war. in those days, like not like the Vietnam War. Everybody was pushing for the servicemen, hoping to get this over with, and it brought the country close together. We hadn't, because of the Dust Bowl earlier and things, people were scattered all over. But it did bring us together to that extent, brought the country together to really appreciate what we have.
And I guess I have one more question related to your work I hadn't thought of, but can you describe for me what the environment was like that you worked in at the airline? Was it, you said that it was men doing these jobs, and of course they were sent, they needed to be in the military, they needed to go fight. So was it just a large group of young women doing this work now? Were you just, was it a building full of young women?
Well, no. There were some boys there. In fact, my boss he got hurt playing football and lost a leg, so he couldn't go. So he was still there. And there were only about four of us working at the time, because it was just for one airline, you know. We didn't have anything to do with the servicemen or anything. And they didn't have the flights in those days like they do today. As we say, we hear today about all the delays and everything, and you see the airplanes piled up and stuff waiting to take off. We didn't have that problem back then, because the skies weren't that crowded. There was only four of us radio operators, and I think there was four teletype operators. And we were just in a little room. Oh, it must have been 14 by 14 or something like that, with all this electrical and radio equipment. It was pretty crowded. And I'm sure there were others too, and we had a lot of the telephone operators there too that were mostly girls now. But then after the war, the boys came back. They took over the radio jobs, and I took over some of them quit, you know, and went, that were working there. And it wasn't a whole group of girls. There were some men, and my overall head boss, he was there too. I suppose he was in his early 50s or something. But we had to change the radios in the airplanes and everything, so it was quite exciting.
When the men came back then and took their radio jobs back, and I imagine this happened across the board, a lot of the work that women were doing, like the job your mom had, when the men came home then after the war, they didn't need the women to do those jobs anymore. Was that kind of a mixed feeling? What did that feel like? Did any of your friends express this, that you'd gained some kind of experience, and then it was just supposed to go back to the way it was before?
No, I don't think so. At least the majority of us didn't feel that way, because we were glad the war was over. We were happy to see the boys come home, and they needed the jobs, you know, because in those days, more men worked and more women stayed home all the time, you know. Mm-hmm. And as I say, I went to work after that. I went back to Colorado and went to work for another airline, but in a different type of a job. But no, I don't think so, because we were happy to see the boys come home. I'm sure some of the girls, maybe, that were in some of the jobs, but I know the ones I worked with didn't feel that way, because we were happy the boys were home.
So that happiness, that joy that the war was over and the boys were home and life could maybe return to normal now, that feeling far outweighed anything else.
That's true. That way far outweighed everything else, to have those boys come home and take over.
Is there anything else you'd like to share with me about your home front wartime experience, Vi?
I don't think so. That pretty well covers it. That's about what I did. As I say, we went to the USO and all those parties and things like that to help with the boys. And that was a lot of the fun and enjoyment, to know that we could help the boys that were in the service, because a lot of them had never been away from home before, you know. So that was good.
Well, thank you so much for sharing your stories with me, Vi, and I'm very glad to have met you.
I'm glad to have met you too, and thank you very much. I hope it helps.